Happy fall, Odyssey fans. I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse Magazine.
And I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Coming up on the podcast, we'll be talking to our old pal, Phil Lawler, about this month's club adventure.
But first, here's the latest news.
Hey, that's my line.
A brand new Blackguard Chronicles book is available now. In keeping with the chess theme of the series, it's titled Knight's Scheme, and it retells the story of the audio episode Waylaid in the Windy City.
And suffice it to say, if you've heard the audio episode, none of the characters there knew what was really going on. There's so much more to the story.
You bet. And you can find out more about this book or the rest of the Blackguard Chronicles series at adventuresinodyssey.com.
And now, let's turn our attention to Phil Lawler and the Martyr and the Rooster. I know that my first thought after hearing this episode was, where did that story come from?
Well, let's ask Phil. Hey, Phil, great to have you back.
Hey, it's great to be here with you guys.
Oh, it's always fun. You know, you wrote and directed a number of shows that have debuted in the Adventures in Odyssey Club over the past few months. Very different styles of episodes. Let's talk about those for a minute, starting with last month's playful cautionary tale, A Simple Reminder.
Well, that was just a lot of fun. I've been doing a lot of kind of heavy episodes lately, and for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was the pandemic, which is kind of forcing us to do remote recording. I thought that might be a good one for us to do, which kind of has all of our regular characters in it, just playing different roles, and then set up a scenario whereby it makes perfect sense for them to be doing this in kind of a remote thing. So it's a remote recording within a remote recording. So it was kind of fun to do that. You know, normally I have to commute about an hour to get to the studio. This was fun because I directed it from my house, where I'm sitting right now, as a matter of fact, doing this podcast. You know, so my commute took all of 30 seconds to get downstairs to upstairs, and I was really happy about that.
When you prepare to write a lighthearted comedy that's full of puns and gags and all that, do you do anything special to get yourself in the right frame of mind?
I try to live in a world that has as much laughter in it as possible anyway. I mean, I just think it's more fun that way. And,
yeah.
You know, and I know that that's not always going to happen. And it's not everything in life is fun and frivolity. But if you can do that, if you can surround yourself with laughter as much as possible. And you see, for me, I have kind of a serious bent anyway. I tend towards seriousness. As a matter of fact, I've always been that way. When I was little, when I was a child, my family called me the judge. Because I never smiled. I think I was about 3 years old before my parents heard me laughing, and it was my older brother who did something silly and made me laugh. And they were like, oh, he can laugh. How about that? That's interesting. So yeah, you kind of have to try to get into that kind of comedy mode. You know, there are certain modes that you get in, but so much of this stuff really just depends on an inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Well, this episode was definitely interesting. From pitching an idea for a show to having it totally finished, it usually takes us about a year. The turnaround for A Simple Reminder was much faster, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, yes and no, okay? So here's the little secret about A Simple Reminder. I wrote that show as a stage show about 20 years ago.
Wow.
And we needed a show. We needed to be able to adapt it to what we're doing in terms of remote recording and have everything work out really well. And so I looked at it. I pulled it out of the files, looked at it, and said, hey, you know what? This works great. So the adaptation of it didn't take very long to do. So from the writing standpoint, you know, it was like a 15 to 20 year journey before it finally got completely finished. But then the speed with which Jonathan Crowe and the production guys turned it around, that was really fast.
You know, also this summer fans got to hear an episode that you wrote that, despite being set around wit's end, was a little unusual because the themes were less black and white. Tell us what you set out to accomplish with Millstones.
Millstones really has come about as a result of a lot of conversations that we've had in the writer's room, a lot of conversations I've had with Dave Arnold about how do we make good ethical moral decisions? What is the process of that? Of course, it's not news to anybody that our world is in a great deal of upheaval right now, especially our country. It's in a great deal of upheaval. I am convinced that a lot of that has come about because we have not focused lately in art, the Christian community especially, on helping young people learn how to make good ethical moral choices. The idea behind it is if every ethical decision that we had to make were completely between just good and evil, then life would be fairly simple. But most of the choices that we have to make in a day are these ethical, moral choices, and they're not between bad and good. They're between good and better and best. That's where we make most of our moral choices, which means that you can make a good moral choice, but it not be the best moral choice. And so how do we get to the point where we're making the best moral choice in any kind of a situation? And both of the storylines in Millstones are designed to complement each other in terms of how do you make ethical, moral decisions. Connie's story in that show shows a person who is really trying, striving to do good, but loses the moral through line of what she's doing. She can't see the forest for the trees. Renee is trying to figure out just how to make good ethical choices. And sometimes when you go through life, you're faced with a situation where you need to make a choice that seems like it might be on the surface not a moral choice or doing something that doesn't seem quite moral, but it actually is for a greater good. These are things that have been on my mind a great deal lately. I think it's part of our mandate here on Adventures in Odyssey to help young people and their parents try to figure out how to make these kinds of ethical moral decisions. And what's even more important, to talk about it as a family.
Yeah.
How do we do this? Yes, they did that on Odyssey. That's not necessarily how we will do it. So we want you to talk about this. And the feedback that I'm getting is great. It's been really wonderful. Even the negative stuff has been really wonderful because it means they're still talking about it. They're still looking at it saying, you know what? We have to grapple with this stuff. We really have to seriously consider how to make this stuff work. And it's not pleasant. It's hard work to do this. But that's why we have to do it.
Yeah. And one of the nice things about the club is that every month we create resources and activities that really help families talk through the adventures. And that can certainly help if there's a theme or a moment that deserves a closer look or maybe a look through a filter of scripture, which we were able to do with that show. Well, since Millstones deals with money and making good decisions, here's an apropos
TRQ,
a.k.a. totally random question. Phil, it's from Anna O2, and she wants to know, if you won the lottery, what would you do with the money?
That's a really interesting question. If I won the lottery, it would have to be because somebody bought me a ticket.
I think we could all probably say the same thing, right?
See, once again, this is an ethical moral decision. So you look at it and you say, well, the lottery, there's really nothing inherently wrong with it, I guess. But for me as a person, it goes against my conscience, so I don't play the lottery. I think the lottery is a bad idea. But if I won the lottery, if somebody bought me a ticket and I won the lottery, there are ways that you have to walk down this decision-making process. You can look at it and say it's a blessing from God. It was unintended. It was a blessing from God. And who am I to turn away a blessing from God? But God wants me to use it in a certain way, so I'll use it in certain ways. I can't tell you specifically what I would do right now if I won the lottery. Depending on how much money it is, I would probably give most of it away. You know, my mother used to say that she's a strong Christian woman, but she didn't have a problem playing the lottery. She once gathered all the kids together and said, if I won that, I would give $1 million to you and $1 million to you and $1 million to you. And I said, Mom, what makes you think I would take your $1 million? And then that just got her all flustered, you know. That's why you should talk about this stuff. We should practice this. You know, I say that in the episode. This kind of thing requires practice. Good ethical moral decision making is a skill, just like everything else is. And if you don't practice it, you'll make bad ones.
Hmm.
You can read all about great ethical moral decisions, but unless you are in the situation where you're making them and you recognize that you're making them, and so you walk down these things, you start talking about these things with your family and yourself, and you put yourself in situations where you recognize that you're making moral decisions, you're making ethical moral decisions, and that you need practice. You need to practice these things on your own, on yourself, putting yourself in these situations so that you can get better and better at them, at making them.
That's a great answer and very thoughtful. And many of your shows are those thought-provoking shows, especially some of those historical dramas that you've written over the years. I can remember last season, The Club, we featured The Morning Star, which was set in the 1400s and was just nominated for a Seneca Award, which is fantastic. So, how do you approach writing these historical dramas maybe differently than other shows? And how do you know when it's okay to take dramatic license in those shows and still remain, you know, ethically true and honest to what happened?
Sure. This is a particular problem when it's biblical historical shows.
Yeah.
Because what happens with any kind of a historical show is that most history books are giving you the highlights. they're giving you all the exciting parts. They're not giving you the in-between parts. So if you take any given biblical story, that story takes place over several years in real life. And yet, you only have an hour to do this, you know, you only have a limited amount of time. And well, it requires dramatic license. That's where the, I suppose, the skill and the cleverness of the writer comes in to say, okay, how can I jump over this little part here? Also, you know, what to leave out. So some of that is dealt with in terms of theme, thematically. What theme are we really trying to hit here with this historical tale? And that will inform us on what I need to include. There may be a whole lot of details in there, and so that informs me on what I want to include. Some of it is just excitement. Some of it is how do we play out the drama? So there's a variety of things that go into it. It really all depends on the tale and the needs of the story and the theme.
Well, your latest Based on a True Story script is this month's club episode, The Martyr and the Rooster. Phil, it was inspired by the work of an awesome ministry called The Voice of the Martyrs. Tell us about that one.
Sometimes we have in the club, we have partner ministries that we partner up with, and Voice of the Martyrs was certainly one of them. Great ministry. That was very interesting. The material from Voice of the Martyrs was really the key there. When you read through some of the things that people are going through around the world, it's just incredible how they're suffering for the cause of Christ. And truly, they are heroic people. They are very heroic people. And so we really wanted to do it well and do it justice. And I hope we have.
You know, the first time I got familiar with Voice of the Martyrs was years ago. Stories for Clubhouse Magazine when we were highlighting in November, every November, the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. And Voice of the Martyrs is very involved there. And I know when we partner with ministries, we learn a lot about what they're doing and how God is using them in the kingdom. So what was one thing that maybe stood out to you in your research as you tackled this project?
Well, I came across a story of things that were happening in Myanmar, used to be called Burma. Some of the persecution that's going on there. I think the communists came in and took over the country. And when they did, they really started cracking down very hard on Christians. One story in particular kind of stood out, some aspects of it. I don't want to say too much in case this airs before that, but it had to deal with a man who ran an orphanage. It was a Christian orphanage. And because he was a Christian, they shut down his orphanage. They shut down a whole bunch of, you know, everything that he was doing and threw him in prison for nothing more than just being a Christian. And it deals with, you know, what do you do when you're faced with that kind of persecution? What do you do as a Christian? Do you deny Christ or do you stand up for him? And that's basically the theme here.
Yeah. Yeah. While it's important to tell stories of Christians who've made the ultimate sacrifice, which we have done many times through the years, how we do that can be tricky on Adventures in Odyssey. Phil, are there certain do's and don'ts that our writers keep in mind for our audience of 8 to 12 year olds?
Yes, very much so, of course. We definitely keep in mind who our target audience is. Like you said, 8 to 12-year-olds. There are certain things that maybe not subjects that are necessarily off limits for them, but how we present it, there may be things within it that maybe we have to rethink how we do it. There are certain things that we just have to be cognizant of in terms of who we are as a ministry, who Focus on the Family is as a ministry, and what we are presenting. It's very interesting because the culture has changed so much over the life of Adventures in Odyssey ever since, you know, started in the 80s and now we're here in the 2020. Because of that, there are some things that are a little bit different. Again, context is very important. But those are things that we talk about in the Focus on the Family has a department, the Orthodoxy department, what they believe and how they present, how we are to present the things that Focus stands for within Odyssey. And they're very good. They're very, very good. And so our job, I think, they're kind of the standards and practices. You know, Orthodoxy is the standards and practices. Our job is to be as creative as we can and then run it by them. And then they come back and go, no, go too far. Went too far. No, let's pull it back here. No, wait a minute. Hold on here.
And to be fair, because most people don't realize this, but it's rare that we have anybody in Orthodoxy take exception to the things that we write and produce because there's so much sort of self-policing, if you will. We've got such a good sense of discernment on this team, iron sharpening iron. There's a lot of conversation that takes place that very rarely does it get to that place, but it is nice to have them there.
Back in July, we recorded another historical drama you wrote called Christmas Bells. Can you give us a sneak preview of that one?
Well, that's about a chap called Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, who is a great American poet, one of the great poets in American history, and just some of the things that happened to him in his life. I came across, again, doing some research, I came across a story that happened to him that really, I won't tell you what it is because I don't want to spoil the episode, but it was a horrific story of what happened. He had several really tragic things happen to him, and yet he wrote some of the most amazing poetry in U.S. history and in really in world history. And so this is kind of a whistle-stop tour of his life and some of the things that happened in his life. And I just want to say right now that Gregory Jabara, who plays Wilson Knox and also plays Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, is brilliant at doing this stuff. So that'll whet everybody's appetite, you know. you got to hear what he does with the poetry and with the singing. There's a song in it. It was just a delight to record.
Well, I think Greg would be the first to say that that starts with good writing. And we are very grateful, Phil, to you for tackling a lot of these historical shows. And even when we haven't asked you to do that, either for an alliance partnership with a ministry, you tend to gravitate to them. I think of shows like The Legend of Sperry McGurk or The Morning Star. What is it that makes historical dramas a good fit for you personally?
Well, I've always loved history, for one thing. I've always just been fascinated by the people who came before us, who set the pattern, who's laid the foundation for whether it's a country or whether it's the church. I've just always been fascinated by how people used to live. So I just naturally gravitate, I think, toward those kinds of stories. You walk down the street and you don't realize this street is here for a reason. I was watching a documentary series about America called The Story of Us. And they talked about Jedediah Smith, who was a great trapper and an explorer in the early 1800s. And they show this map. It's really interesting because he walked up and down the entire United States several times. And the way the narrator puts it, he says, you know, he traveled up and he traveled down and he traveled up and he traveled down. And that pathway is now Interstate 15. And you go, wow, that's just amazing. You know, that's just when you're traveling on Interstate 15, you're traveling where Jedediah Smith walked. And that's just one freeway. You know, you think about all of the other ones that are all over the country, the roads that we travel, the cities where we live, the people who have come before us, who walked along there.
Well, Phil, it's always thought-provoking and enlightening when we get to have you on the podcast. So thanks again for joining us today.
You bet. You bet. It's my pleasure, Jen.
After talking with Phil, I appreciate The Martyr and the Rooster and Voice of the Martyrs even more.
Let's hear a preview of that episode.
Next time on Adventures in Odyssey, hear the story of a dangerous prison camp.
Don't kill me!
If the guilty ones will not reveal themselves, then all will suffer.
And a Christian named Mr. Tuza, who brought light into the darkness.
I'm trying to help them, sir.
Travel to Myanmar for an incredible story about standing up for our faith. Next time on Adventures in Odyssey.
So we've got The Martyr and the Rooster on the club now, and the Rydell Revelations Part 2 coming up on the radio and online this weekend.
Yep, lots to look forward to. And of course, you can hear the whole Rydell Revelations 3-parter and all of Album 69, Best Kept Secrets, in the club right now as well.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation to Focus on the Family.
Those websites again are adventuresinodyssey.com/podcast and aioclub.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.